is Nestor from Baltimore.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, you have time to talk now?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, how's the tour going?
Very good, thanks, yeah.
Where are you today?
Salt Lake City.
Lake City, the other end of the world as far as we're concerned here, I think.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Oh, so were you all off last night, or did you play?
Yeah, well, we were driving up from Southern California, so we were on the road yesterday.
How did the California leg go?
Very good.
What kind of halls are you playing there?
Been playing universities and places like the Wilton and, you know, about sort of 3,000 sort of capacity places.
So how has the reaction changed? I think the last time I saw you was on the Strength Tour. You were playing a little university hall here, about 1,500 people, and the place was just rabid, it seemed like. And that was on the Strength Tour. I was like 3.5 years ago now.
Yeah.
For a long time. I tended to stay away from you on the Dylan Tour. I just wanted to see you guys as as the only act when I could see you play for 3 hours.
That's the stuff, yeah.
I think it would have been very underwhelmed by anything else that, what I saw that night. Seeing you for 30 minutes wouldn't have really...
Yeah, no.
How's the reaction changed?
It's still as rapid as ever. It's been really good on this stretch so far. Even more intense in a way, because all the gigs sold out really fast. So it's been that, when it's like people can't get in and they're phoning up to get tickets off the radio and, all that sort of thing. It makes it really exciting.
Do you see the base fan support growing pretty much then?
Yeah, we've...
Well, it seemed like the people that I saw at the show 3.5 years ago, and you guys pretty much turned me into a fan because I was kind of skeptical, but they were, like, really hardcore. I mean, they had all the alarm shirts and pins and all that kind of paraphernalia.
We get an awful lot of dedication from our audience like that. But the new album seems to have picked up a lot of new fans. And also the Dylan tour has brought out a lot of people that saw us playing with him. So it's grown in that respect. But we still get people who are, alarm fans from head to toe.
So are you disappointed in some ways to still be playing small? I mean, you were playing these kind of clubs 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you had a pretty successful album. Now you have a successful song. And, if you would have asked me in 1986, and I was writing then, and I wrote that this band, this is going to be your last chance to see them in a small place. And then here you are 3 years later, you're coming back and you're playing a place even smaller than the place I saw you before. You're playing a bar here.
Well, where are we playing at your place?
Hammerjacks.
Oh, right.
It's a club. You've never been there before, but everyone that I ever talk to, I tell them it's an interesting experience. It's the biggest bar you'll ever play in.
Right. what we're really doing is doing this tour, sort of getting as much as we can in before we come back next year. It's really just been doing like a lightning sort of strike on the US at this point, and just playing places that we know is going to be, really packed out, and the fans can see us in that intimate sort of atmosphere, and who knows, the big venues might come calling on these days.
So how much time off have you had in the last, 3 or 4 years?
Not a lot. We've just really continued working, especially since... the Dylan tour, we went straight home to Wales for about 6 months to sort of write the Change album, and then we recorded it fairly quickly.
Do you feel a need to have material out all the time?
No, we haven't really yet. Most people have been surprised that we've left it like 2 years between each album that we've made. We've toured for a long period of time, and that's been the backbone of the group, really. Probably we should have made more records, and you never know.
Well, I didn't get a chance to talk to you on the last tour, but it seemed to me that the sound from Strength to Eye of the Hurricane seemed to change somehow. It seemed to get a little more polished edge to it. Then I'm sure you've heard that before, but how do you react to that?
Well, we had to make Behind the Hurricane record was a fairly difficult period of all our lives. We had a manager who wasn't very strong, and he was very unscrupulous, and we changed from him because he was doing some of the black side of rock and roll that you hear about was happening in our backyard, and we had to take steps to deal with that. Also, we were working with a producer who we didn't get on with particularly. The more the session went on, especially as we'd put so much hard work into the Hurricane record before we recorded it. We'd even toured it for 3 weeks before we went into the studio. And yet the producer was still using us to sort of have his own way of expressing himself in a way, rather than getting the best out of the band.
And who was the producer on that one?
John Porter.
Okay.
And the engineer we didn't get on well with either. And
so at this point, you don't like them. Are you forced to keep them on?
Well, at the time, we were under pressure from IRS, you see.
To get an album on the streets.
Well, yeah, you know, when you sign a contract, you can't be naive about it. You can't just walk out of it when you want. You know, and if a record company are putting up a lot of money to make an album and they've paid a producer and paid an engineer, you know, you have to do your best that you can. And at the time, we still maintained that we thought we could get the best out of the album, and we got the best that we could out of the record. But looking back on it in hindsight, we, you know, even though we were proud of the record and the songs that we wrote for the record, we realised that when we started playing it live, that there was more to it than we actually got out of it in the initial sessions. You know, not that we felt, you know, that we were going wrong with the record or anything like that.
Do you feel at all that it's overproduced, that it took the raw edge away from you that, you know, some of your hardcore fans liked?
Well, I don't know about that, but, you know, I know at the time, you know, it's sort of, from one aspect, it was a successful record. You know, it presented another side to the band. Because of a lot of things that were going on, we'd been together, for a long time as well. And we were questioning our own relationship with each other at the time as well. And it was a difficult time because we had a manager who we didn't realise at the time could see his own demise and was trying to break us up.
Was this a drug thing or...?
No, he was... You know, he was stealing from the band. He was ripping us off.
Oh, really? Okay.
Right, and you know that. So that's something we don't really want to go into.
Okay, yeah, that we won't go into
you
it.
No, because it's not really that professional. I'm not sure the fans don't want to hear about us doing that kind of thing. What's going on to the band? But you know, it was a very difficult, tense time, and to get out of that situation, we had to clear our management out and sort all that out. And we ended up managing ourselves for about 12 months. At the same time, we renegotiated our record deal so that we could have more autonomy in the recording process. That meant that we could take care of, you know, cutting the deals with the producers and all that, so that we didn't have to, you know, honour deals that were made by a third party.
Right.
And which we've done, and we've sorted ourselves out.
So how does a producer affect the sound of an album, personalities aside, you know?
Well, a producer can affect it in many ways because, you see, if he's hands on the desk, which most of them are, you know, and they're affecting the actual sound that you're making, you know, they can change things quite dramatically. And when you don't quite understand the processes that go from when you actually play your music in the studio and then it goes, it's mixed, then it's cut, and at every stage of that record the sound is treated so that by the time it comes out on the record, what comes out in the actual you know, to the listener is often quite different from what you start out with in the studio, and it takes a long time for a band to understand the dynamics that has on the heart of the sound of the band.
Can you hang on for one second? I've got another call.
Okay.
Thank you. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Hi, I'm sorry.
Hi.
I'm just doing interviews all day long here, and I've got other people calling me, but I'm not going to rush you off because I've been waiting too long to get a hold of you. So would you say the Eye of the Hurricane album, it could have been better? I mean, you're proud of it and all that, but...
From a production point of view, yes, it could have been better. And, you know, that's why we put the EP out after it, to show that you know, there's another level of performance that we're capable of. But you know, but to make that record, we wouldn't have been able to make the Change album and the records that had come without making that record. I remember at the time meeting Roger Daltrey and saying we were having Roger Daltrey knew that we were having a really tough time, you know, as a band. And he said, look, you've got to go through that period. That is what makes the real band. That's what every real band that has made its fifth and sixth album has had to go through that stage. And he said, you know, if you're worth anything, if your relationship is worth anything with your fans, you can survive that period. And it's a very important time. And looking back on it now, I believe that Eye of the Hurricane, when we look back on that record in the light of records that we'll be able to make in 2 or 3 years' time, we'll view the Eye of the Hurricane as being a watershed record.
Okay. Now, how do you feel now about those earlier... I mean, this sound of the new album kind of is getting back towards that, but, I mean, what was the production like on your first EP with Declaration and those kinds of things? I mean, it's this sounds to me like a completely different sound.
Well, what we did with Change is we've just recorded a raw live record. You know, even when we were recording Declaration, we were still struggling with producers. I mean, that's why we've never worked with Alan Shatlock since that record. You know, we've never worked with the same producer twice. You know, we were always struggling, even then, against producers who wanted to impose their personality, their idea of what we should be sounding like on the band. And with the Change record, Change is the most honest Alarm record that we've made since Unsafe Building or since The Stand. And it's that is what we sound like today.
So Shatlock was your hire?
Alan Shatlock was the best of the producers that were available to us at the time.
So, but you hired him. IRS, he was not a third man. He's your gun, pretty much.
Oh, no, Tony Visconti is that did Change with us.
Okay.
When we did Declaration or The Stand, you know, it was, you know, we were new to the thing. We thought, record, you make a record, you've got to have a producer. Everyone has. You don't question those things when you're starting. You know, it's like you've got an editor. You know, you don't question that when you start.
Right.
You have to have one. You know, and it's like. Alan Shatlock there, we met Alan Shatlock, we met about 3 or 4 other guys, and we thought, oh, well, we like Alan the best. And then when we did a record with him, we thought, oh, well, maybe this other guy's going to be better than him. And you start whittling them down until you realise who's actually the right man for the job. Some people are really lucky, and they meet really sympathetic record producers from day one, and they stick with them. And, you know, some people, it takes a little bit more time.
Okay, so now, you know, coming from the area of the world you come from, the comparisons to you two seem to be inevitable, but has that hurt you over the period of time with their success? And
it's worked for us in both ways. You know, it's worked for us at times, and it's worked against us at times. And, you know, the comparisons have been, it's been a tough one to shake off, to be quite honest, but it's, you know, it's something that we've managed to do for the most part with the Change record. You know, I don't think people can see Soul Me Down the River and think that sounds like you two.
No, I don't. I could agree with that.
You know, you know, it's something we've known we'd be able to do in the fullness of time, and it's starting to happen.
Is it a conscious thing with you though that? Knowing it's always going to be there.
I mean, we don't think about it. You know, it seems that a lot of other people do.
Okay, the song on this album, The Rock. I listened to it. It sounds at the end a whole lot like "Rain in the Summertime." Is that anything on purpose with that, or?
Yeah, that was just a little reference that we wanted to make in there, really. Yeah, we're trying to build on what we've done as a band, you know, and work, you know, develop some songs that we enjoyed.
Okay, now doing the Dylan tour, did you hit a new audience with that? Are you seeing people of that age group coming to the shows?
Yeah, I've started having people go through my trash cans these days.
Okay, and on the tour, you're doing a song in Welsh, is that correct?
Yeah, we have been, yeah.
And what song is that?
Well, it's been varying from time to time. It's been really, you know, like your question about the, you know, the do we pick a Dylan audience? No, we definitely picked up a certain element of our audience that really go, like I was saying, you know, like the old Dylan fans used to go through his garbage cans, you know. We've definitely got an element of fans like that, you know, and we're the sort of band, because we don't play the same set every night, and we throw in things, you know, just at random sometimes. You know, people are always, we have a lot of people that are following us, you know, just been through California, there been people following us, you know, for like 7 shows on the trot. They started in San Francisco and followed us all the way down. And
that's like the Grateful Dead.
Yeah. And you know, that's why we sort of change the set around a bit, so that people, you know, can see something different, and we can make sure that, you know, people who come in at night after night get something a bit different, without, you know, altering the set so drastically that it, you know, it takes away from the main thrust of it. And so we've been singing certain parts in Welsh, sometimes half a song, sometimes a whole song, and, you know, changing that around from night to night.
So how much of a change do you get from night to night? We do 20 songs, and how much?
We you know, it depends. Sometimes, you know, we change 4 or 5, sometimes, you know, 6, sometimes more, sometimes less.
So you still have the capability to play almost anything you've ever done?
Oh, yeah.
Right on the spot?
Yeah.
Okay. A question I've been meaning to ask you, I knew if I ever got a hold of you, is Walk Forever by My Side on the Strength album. How did that song come about? Just one of those off-the-wall kind of questions. One of the songs I like the most.
Yeah. I just wanted to write a song that expressed the way, you know, expressed a depth of feeling, you know, that you can have with somebody, a togetherness. You know, it is a love song, but it's more than just a love song. It's when it goes, you know, I've sort of seen the word love sort of drag through the pop chart so much that it's almost become meaningless. And I wanted to try and write something that expresses it much more than just four letters.
How long did it take you to write it?
It didn't take at all. It took a long time in the build-up, but it didn't take that long to actually write. I wrote it one Sunday morning, and it's you know, I've sort of song that a lot of people who've been following the tour, I can't tell you how many people I've met who've come along who've had that song played at the wedding, or are going to have. I mean, I even had it played at my wedding by the band.
That's, you know, that's pretty much what I was getting at with the wedding thing. I wondered if you had any strange stories that went along with that, but...
Well, you know, I mean, you know, like the other night, I had a couple come up to me and after the gig outside asking me if I'd... one guy came up and said, I've got my girlfriend round the corner, she doesn't know this, I'm going to ask her to get engaged, but I want you to sing Walk Forever by My Side while I ask her if she'll marry me. And I thought that was pretty bizarre.
So you did it?
Like, I just wound down at the time, so what I did was I wrote the lyrics out for him on the set list that we played, and, you know, wrote on the top of it, congratulations on your engagement, and gave her this piece of paper, and she read it while he was stood next to her, and then they got engaged.
Oh, where was this at?
In Riverside, UC Riverside.
This was a couple weeks ago, then?
Two nights ago.
Well, it's funny, I'd bring that song up. Do you still play that one?
Sometimes, yeah.
You don't play it every night then?
Not every night, no.
I'll play when you come here. All right. Well, I shall see you in a few weeks, and I appreciate you talking to me today.
Okay, thank you.
And I appreciate your honesty.
Yeah, just come back and say hello.
Sure thing. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.